You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine. It's 10 minutes past 8 o'clock on this Friday morning, April the 20th. Time for our Friday Week in Review, when we'll be talking about practically all of the stories you just heard in the news, plus any others that you would like to bring up. 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison. 263-1890, 263-1890. We'll probably start with the Virginia Tech shooting and all of the various issues raised by that. Talk some about the Senate Judiciary Committee hearings into the dismissal of U.S. attorneys yesterday, with Alberto Gonzalez, the Attorney General, testifying before the committee. Plus, we'll talk about the Supreme Court ruling on the partial birth abortion law and many other things. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. Let me welcome in our guests. We have with us Owen Robinson, blogger for the website bootsandsabers.com, a columnist for the West Bend Daily News. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy.
And also Matt Rothschild, editor of the Progressive Magazine. Good morning.
Hi, Joy. Hi, Owen. How are you?
Good. How are you today?
Not bad.
Well, the week certainly started off on a horrific note. Here's President Bush following the murder of 32 students and staff at Virginia Tech University on Monday.
Schools should be places of safety and sanctuary in learning. When that sanctuary is violated, the impact is felt in every American classroom and every American community. Today, our nation grieves with those who have lost loved ones at Virginia Tech. We hold the victims in our hearts. We lift them up in our prayers. And we ask a loving God to comfort those who are suffering today.
And today is an official day of mourning for the Virginia Tech shooting victims. At 11 o'clock this morning, a moment of silence. Governor Doyle has asked Wisconsin to participate in that moment of silence as well. Well, let me just your general thoughts, Matt Rothschild, first on that news and your reaction to it.
Well, it's just been so heart-wrenching to watch. You know, we're out here in Wisconsin and, you know, we're watching it on TV and, you know, I'm in bed with my wife, we're watching the news, and it's just, you know, it's hard not to weep over this and to see the pain that's been inflicted on those families of the victims and, you know, more senseless gun violence. But even before I get to the politics of it, and, you know, it does take me a while sometimes to get to the politics of it because the humanity of it is just so overwhelming. And actually, you know, Bush does that ceremonial stuff pretty well. I usually, you know, criticize him on this show, and maybe the one thing he does, maybe he should be a ceremonial president and give the job over to somebody else. But the you know, I feel bad for everyone here. I feel bad for the administrators. Yeah, they could have done a better job. In hindsight, of course, they should have done a better job. But, you know, they're doing the best they can, and now they have this enormous tragedy and guilt on their hands. And that's not going to be something that's going to be easy for them to handle either.
We'll talk some politics, too. But, Owen Robinson, your general thoughts on this?
I agree with, obviously, with what President Bush said. I agree with what Matt just said, that it's obviously a very, very personal tragedy for many people. Keeping in mind not just the dead, but the dozens who are injured, who are still in the hospital, the families who are grieving, the administrators. I agree with Matt that there's going to be enormous pressure going back and with the benefit of hindsight, nitpicking every single decision that was made on that day. But we have to remember that that at a very personal level, these were honorable people doing the best job that they knew to do, and don't have the benefit of that hindsight. And I think we just all grieve for the families of those who are no longer with us.
Yeah, certainly not trying to be crass here, but the politics of this has come up already in terms of gun laws on both sides, saying that we need stricter gun controls, so someone like this doesn't get guns to commit this kind of murder, to gun rights people who say if this campus was not a gun-free zone, somebody would have been armed with a gun and maybe could have taken care of the suspect. Matt, what do you think?
Well, there are campus police and there's city police who can have guns. Our gun owners think every student should have a gun. I mean, that's just going to bring slaughter to campuses at an enormous proportion, because when students break up with a girlfriend or boyfriend, they'll reach for the gun. Or when they're under stress during an exam period, they'll reach for a gun. Or if they've been at a huge party all night long and someone pushes them, they'll reach for a gun. That's not going to solve anything except pile the corpses higher. The thing that bothers me about how our legislators have handled this actually has been how pusillanimous the Democrats have been. I mean, there you have Harry Reid, the day after this terrible shooting, make a public statement saying, I hope there's not a rush to do anything. Well, if there isn't a rush to do anything after a slaughter like this at Virginia Tech on gun control, I don't know when there will be. There are 10,000 people killed in gun-related homicides every year in the United States. We got to do something about it. Our gun-related homicides, 10 times that of Canada, 50 times that of Britain, 200 times that of Japan. I mean, come on, when are we going to do something about this?
Owen.
Well, I think Harry Reid nails it exactly, that we don't make rush to create policy based on one-off horrific incidents. We need to make considered policy choices on what is the most sensible thing to do. And I think it's worth noting, and this is actually an experiment I did on my blog, is you tell me what gun law that doesn't exist today would have prevented this tragedy. Nobody can come up with one, because there isn't one. And it also appears it appears to be coming out now that perhaps he shouldn't have even been legally allowed to purchase a weapon anyway, because of the judge declaring him mentally unfit. So perhaps there was a failure in implementing that gun law that was already in place. But regardless, it's clear from the evidence we've seen come out that he spent months planning this and was intent on committing mass murder. And it's a bit naive to think that if we had had just one more law or just one more, you know, regulation, that it could have been avoided.
Yeah. Well, if you ban handguns, it could have been avoided. If no one can sell a handgun except to police officers, it could have been avoided.
Okay, let's talk about that, Matt. Okay. First, we have, of course, the whole Second Amendment issue, but we can talk about that. We can talk about amending the Constitution if we do think that's a rational policy choice. But given the hundreds of millions of weapons in America today and our culture and our thousands of miles of border that illegal people and illegal drugs flow across every single day, it's a bit, again, naive to think that we can put this genie back in the bottle.
Yeah. Well, we're certainly going to make it harder for someone to get a handgun.
Let me bring up another issue related to the massacre that is in the news this morning. NBC received a package from the shooter that included a video and pictures and a manifesto of apparently why he did this, though it was a lot of rambling. NBC aired it. Other media also picked it up, and now they're pulling back because of harsh criticism for airing this man's last words. Matt Rothschild, should the media have used those pictures?
Absolutely. That's what we do in the journalism business. We get facts. We report the facts. We don't have to hype the facts. We don't have to repeat the film 1,000 times and say, this is exclusive NBC. Look at how great we are. We got this piece of evidence and information. But that's what we do in the business of journalism. We try to get stuff out there, let people decide on it. I mean, let's take away the visual aspect of it. And what if they found his diary from the night before and it had awful things written? And we're not supposed to hear about that because, oh, it might offend the sensibilities of the people of this country. We shouldn't in journalism be so concerned, and I know it might sound cold, about sensibilities. Our job is to get information out and let people decide and deal with their own sensibilities and be grown-ups about it.
What do you think, Owen?
I think their actions were fairly despicable, and I think that the coarsening of our culture that they're encouraging, and it says a lot about how voyeuristic America has become. The information that was in there didn't add anything, didn't add any information. All it did was confirm what we already knew, that he was that the killer was an evil person. But we already knew that from stuff that had already been released. What I think is particularly telling is that when NBC received this package of information, they did call the Virginia police and hand it over to them, but only after they took it all out and made copies of everything. Now, if you receive a package of information from a mass murderer, shouldn't we at least hand it to the police to let them process it through the normal evidentiary processes before we publish it out on to the world? I think that their actions were reprehensible.
Actually, that's what journalists are supposed to do, though. We are not adjuncts of the police department. We aren't, agents of the FBI that are deputized in an emergency. Our job is to report the news. When we get news, we report it. If they want to pass it on to the FBI or to the police, that's up to them. And I do think they did the right thing by doing that. But certainly they had a right to copy the material and air the material before they did it. That is their job. That is our job in the business of journalism. And yes, I do think it added information. I do think we found out more about what this person was like by seeing them up close and personal. And I don't think we can just describe everything to the big E, evil person. You slap the evil label on someone and you stop trying to figure out what happened. And we need to figure out what happened with this kind of personality to make sure that we try to stop it from happening again.
But there was a time, and there are still some news organizations out there who do practice responsible journalism. Just because you have the right to do something and you can do something doesn't mean that you should.
Yeah. Well, I think it's responsible to give people as much information as possible on a horrendous crime that happened that everyone's talking about. They got vital new information. Getting it out there is what we do.
I have to give our listeners some vital information. This is the Friday Week in Review. You're listening to it on the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Kerr-Dean talking with Matt Rothschild, editor of The Progressive Magazine, and Owen Robinson, a blogger for the website bootsandsabers.com and a columnist for the West Bend Daily News. 1-800-642-1234, our phone number if you'd like to bring up a topic in the news this week. In Madison, 263-1890. We'll take a couple of calls on the shooting and the aftermath and then move on to some other issues like the Alberto Gonzalez testimony yesterday before the Senate Judiciary Committee. I'm Joy Kerr-Dean. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Kerr-Dean. You're listening to The Week in Review. If you stay tuned, you will hear your views on the news after 4 this afternoon with Ben Marins and his guest. To the phones now, Amy in Appleton is with us first. Hi, Amy. You're on the air.
Good morning, Joy. Thanks for taking my call. My comment, I pulled back pretty quickly on Monday after I got inundated with news on the Virginia Tech massacre, but my comment about hearing the rhetoric of more guns would have solved this is that I am completely frustrated that you still have people who defend the way that we handle the right to bear arms in this country when you see something like this happen. We do have unfortunate experiments going on in the United States that are unofficial, that are inner cities where most people, many people, do carry weaponry, and it's atrocious the numbers of innocent people and gunplay lead to death in those situations. So you don't need, I mean, we don't need any more than that to see the right way that we need to control the amount of access, especially people who obviously have mental health or even slight mental health concerns. We need to control access to this kind of weaponry because this, more often than not, is where the emotion that drives this kind of death ends up. I am so dismayed. That day, actually, I was on the phone with a company I do business with, and the woman who was taking care of my problem said, boy, if everybody had guns on that campus, that wouldn't be happening. And it just about made me cry. So yeah. I really do think it is time for us to have a reaction to this as a country. And
okay, Amy, thank you. Owen Robinson?
Well, I think that what we're seeing is an emotional reaction to what to American culture, to our history and our heritage, and some people decry that. I do think it is interesting when we do talk about gun saturation and where it helps, where it doesn't. For instance, up until very recently, our nation's capital did have a handgun ban. You couldn't even own one or have it in your home, and yet it was one of the most violent places in this country. Going back to Matt's comment about guns on schools, it's worth noting that in Texas, you can carry a concealed weapon on campuses, not in buildings, but on campus. There's a couple Virginia schools that allow concealed carry everywhere in those schools, and we don't see the kind of violence that or uptick in violence that so many doomsday sayers tend to say. And we see that in our country, every single state except two, Wisconsin and Illinois, allow some form of concealed carry. Two states, Alaska and Vermont, allow concealed carry without even needing to get a permit from the government or anything, and we don't see their levels of violence being any different than the rest of America. So I think the level of violence we have in America has much more to do with our culture than it has to do with the weapons that people are choosing to use.
Well, I think the fact that D.C. bans handguns doesn't make D.C. impermeable to handguns. People can get their handguns elsewhere. The problem is we have a national saturation with guns, almost a gun per person. Handguns are a huge proportion of that. And, you know, it just if we restricted or banned the use of handguns, we would greatly reduce the opportunity for the kind of mass murder we saw this week in Virginia. I think Amy's absolutely right about it. I think it's condescending to call it an emotional reaction. It's a logical reaction. Certainly there's passion behind there. I have that same passion too about it, and I am infuriated with the arguments on the other side, and I am appalled that the Democrats are seeking cover on this issue because they think they're playing the angles. They're playing politics at a time where it really requires courage for people to stand up and say, we have a really serious problem in our country. Didn't you see it this week? And can't we do something about it rather than say, oh, it's okay.
And see, here again, you talk about banning a particular type of weapon. It's worth noting that up until this shooting, the deadliest school shooting in history happened in 61 by a person using a rifle. The choice of weapon matters little. It's the person. The evil person who decides to go out and commit mass murder. And I know you don't like the word evil, but I don't see how you can characterize somebody who murders 32 other people as anything but.
Michael in Danbury, hi, you're on the air.
Good morning, Joe, and good morning to your guests. I think that dealing with a gun situation is more of a distraction than anything else. I think it's a willingness for us not to face the facts now that we know what it is that this young man was problematic. He had been crying for help for over 2 years. Our sheriff's department, the police department, the college knew that he was in trouble. Even as early as this last year, a professor threatened to quit her job if this fellow was not put under the guidance of mental support and help. The man was in trouble. It wasn't the gun. Society had isolated this guy to the point where he, in his own planning, took this action. He didn't even have a gun until about 2 or 3 months ago.
He got one from a Green Bay gun dealership.
Yeah, but he didn't have it. Joy, the point was he didn't have it until just 2 or 3 months. It wasn't like he was packing a gun and carrying it for months and months and years and years. He did that as a part of his act to cry for help, and we're not looking at our unwillingness to bite the bullet and help people who and recognize people who are in trouble. This guy wasn't evil. He was sick. He even in his message to NBC, he says, you guys could have stopped this.
Yeah. Matt, did you want to start?
Well, I think we need to, to understand and be a little more wary, obviously, of the people who are mentally deranged and try to get them the help they need and certainly remove them from the community where they are going to do harm if we can figure that out and not infringe on their rights. And I think in every college right now, at every university, at every high school campus, there are people from the head of the institution to the guidance counselors to the police force on down who are worrying about this very question and what to do about it. So I think Michael has a point. I mean, I do think, the fact that he didn't have a gun 2 months ago is immaterial. He got a gun. One was semi-automatic. He was able to fire multiple rounds in a hurry. and kill 32 people. So, yes, the gun is an important factor in this whole thing. But also the question that they're dealing with at Virginia Tech in the investigation is what could they have done more? And I think that's an important question for them to wrestle with. I don't think they need to play a blame game. And I know part of the grief process is anger and blame. And so I fully understand that. But I do think we need to be more alert to the red flags. And not everyone who is mentally unstable by any stretch of the imagination becomes a mass murderer. So we can't extrapolate that way either.
Owen?
I think the caller gets it exactly right, that there are layers and layers of issues that I think this tragedy is going to uncover that we need to evaluate and decide how our society is going to deal with. For instance, there was a bill actually on its way through the Virginia legislature that would have forbade universities from expelling students who have shown mentally ill, violent tendencies. And those kinds of things where we're spending so much time trying to keep ourselves from again, violating the civil rights of mentally ill or unstable people, that we're not protecting society from their possible actions. And I agree with Matt. I don't think that everybody who's mentally ill, certainly, the tiniest percentage of them, would do something like this. But it's clear from this case that there were many, many warning signs for a long period of time, and the system was set up in a way where we just kept releasing him back out to do what he wanted, and we never did something about it, either to get him the help he needed or to isolate him from the rest of society. And we see things like there's some evidence now that he was on some antidepressants. This is something we've seen in other mass shootings before, where people were on antidepressants. We need to look at that link. There are a lot of issues here we need to look at, and the gun issue is I agree, it is somewhat of a distraction, but it's the one that everybody likes to jump on. I saw news stories out before the bodies were cold about how this would reignite the gun control debate, and they were surely correct.
Yeah, your reaction, Owen Robinson, to the news that just broke yesterday that one of the guns that this Cho used was purchased through a Green Bay online gun shop?
I think I'm sure Wisconsin media loves it, mm-hmm. because it gives us a nice local hook to grab onto. But if you purchase a weapon over the Internet, how that works is they ship a weapon to your local gun dealer, and that local gun dealer is tasked with enforcing all of the state regulations on your purchase of that weapon. So purchasing a weapon over the Internet doesn't bypass any of the restrictions we already have in place.
I mean, it just shows how easy it is to get these weapons, though. 200 million guns in this country. And the easy availability of guns, you can't tell me, you can tell me, but I'm not going to be convinced, doesn't lead to the 10,000 people a year who are killed by firearms in homicides. And Owen mentioned a bill that was going through the process in Virginia. There's a Virginia legislator in the House of Representatives, Rick Boucher, who introduced a piece of legislation about a month before this massacre. This was an NRA bit of legislation that would have allowed people who get a permit for a concealed weapon in one state to use that concealed weapon in any state, even if that other state bans concealed weapons. Yeah. And so that's the kind of, I think, craziness that's pervading here.
Boy, we better move on to another issue, even though our lines are full with callers who want to talk about the shooting. There are many other things that happened in the news this week, including Alberto Gonzalez testifying before the Senate Judiciary Committee yesterday. He was scheduled to make that testimony on Tuesday, but Congress postponed the hearings. He told the Senate Judiciary Committee, which includes Senators Feingold and Cole, that mistakes were made in the firing of 8 U.S. attorneys, but he said that the attorneys were not fired for improper political reasons. Faced a lot of hard questions and also faced some opposition, from Republican Senator Tom Coburn. Here he is.
Mr. Attorney General, it's my considered opinion that the exact same standards should be applied to you and how this was handled. It was handled incompetently. The communication was atrocious. It was inconsistent. It's generous to say that there were misstatements. That's a generous statement. And I believe you ought to suffer the consequences that these others have suffered. And I believe the best way to put this behind us is your resignation.
So what do you think of that, Matt Rothschild?
Well, I would have thought the guy would have resigned a long time ago. I thought he should have resigned after Abu Ghraib because he was responsible for the torture justifications that allowed that to happen. And clearly, in this instance, he lied about what he knew beforehand at a press conference. It looks to me like this wasn't a rogue operation, but a Karl Rove operation all the way along up in the White House. And to deny that politics had anything to do with it when his chief of staff was saying, is this person a good Bushy or not, doesn't really passed the smell test, and the fact that they went after Carol Lamb in San Diego the day after she had convicted Randy Cunningham suggests that there was politics at the very highest levels involved here. So I think he's got to go. I think he's lost support, certainly within the Senate. The question is, you know, whether Bush is going to cling to his buddy or not.
Owen Robinson?
You're not going to find me defending Gonzalez. It seems clear that there were three major things that went wrong here that point more to incompetence than anything else. One is that you have Gonzalez, who very clearly just got a list of U.S. attorneys to be fired from his upper staff and just signed off on it without doing any personal scrutiny of the reasons behind that. Second, you do have his, and I think it's accurately, it was accurate, whichever senator said, that it's very generous to call them misstatements. I believe that was Coburn, actually, you know, saying that he knew the reasons and had all these justifications. It's very clear he went back after the fact to reconstruct those reasons. And then coming into Congress and just not having control of his agency. He speaks as if he's talking about somebody else when these were personal meetings that he was involved in and stuff. But it's important to note that nobody is alleging any illegal activity here, perhaps in improper activity as far as firing people for political reasons, but that happens all the time and has happened all the time. Whether we agree with it or not is a political issue. It's not a legal issue. And so it seems a bit hypocritical for these congressmen to be sitting up there criticizing, you know, politics in the executive branch when they're clearly using the hearings for their own political gain. So as far as whether Gonzalez should be fired or not or resign, you know, if for incompetence and for bungling this whole mess, I'd be open to it. On the other hand, you know, this is just another pelt for the Democrats, and they're going to go after someone else. So I almost just want to leave him in office for another 2 years so they can beat up on him.
What about Owen Robinson? Our own Wisconsin senators brought up the Milwaukee situation and the prosecution of Georgia Thompson. Do you think that U.S. Attorney Steve Biskupic was under pressure to keep his job and that might have motivated him to bring those charges against Georgia Thompson?
Yeah, I don't think so. He says he wasn't. The prosecution went forward with the help and cooperation of a Democratic Attorney General and a Democratic DA of Madison. Everybody who's been involved with that, Democrat and Republican, every prosecutor has said that Biskupic acted appropriately and professionally. The case was brought well before his name apparently showed up on a list, then was taken off. I think that they're unrelated issues.
Matt?
Well, it's not an unreasonable surmise to make that he was feeling pressure from the White House, and he decided to do something that the White House would like. I mean, what Gonzalez testified to was that there were repeated meetings with Rove and one meeting at least with Bush where there was discussion about what to do with some of these prosecutors around the country. So I don't think that we can say flat out that that Biskupic wasn't under pressure to do this. It was a ridiculous case to bring. I couldn't believe she was convicted. The trial judge had an obligation to throw that case out because the evidence was so poor, and he was a hack Republican judge who just let it go through. And when it got to the appellate court, they didn't even want to hear it. I mean, they just threw it out and let Georgia Thompson free, which he should have been all along. What concerns me here is the suggestion from Owen that, you know, what the Bush administration people did, what Gonzalez did, was all nothing illegal about it. To me, it was clearly an impeachable offense. I think Gonzalez should be impeached. I think Bush should be impeached. There's another reason Bush should be impeached as well. It's an impeachable offense because, yes, on the one hand, the president does have the right to appoint prosecutors, and prosecutors can't even legally be appointed so that they follow the president's agenda. But what they can't do is prosecute people strictly for partisan gain in an election. And there is the appearance, anyway, that that's what happened.
Let me get one caller in on this, and then we need to move on. Jeff in Mount Horeb. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Mm-hmm. I hear the guest comments on Congress's the way that they passed a bill allowing this to take place in the first place, and whether they are not compliant, but what are complicit in what has happened here by basically giving up Senate oversight of these appointments.
They're talking about the provision in the Patriot Act.
That's correct.
Yeah. Yeah. Matt?
Well, I totally agree that the senators were not doing their due diligence job when they passed this law. You know, I would bet that more than half of them didn't even know it was in there, that they were absolutely surrendering part of their senatorial prerogatives to approve the nomination of U.S. attorneys. But then look at what Gonzalez said about this yesterday. Yesterday he said, well, I really wasn't in favor of it in the first place. And under questioning, he couldn't even say how that thing got into the bill. I mean, that's ridiculous.
Owen?
Well, I suspect that Matt is correct. He may be underestimating, in fact. I'll bet that close to 2/3 of them had no idea that that was in there.
Russ Feingold knew it was in there.
Yeah, but ignorance is no excuse. If they didn't want it in there, they should have addressed it. So whether they're complicit or not, that's kind of a loaded word. I do think that they did surrender some of their legislative authority. They did so willingly. They did so knowingly. And now they're seeing the fruits of that. So. So be it.
We will talk about what Harry Reid said yesterday about the war in Iraq. And welcome more of your calls during this Friday Week in Review, 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890, talking with Owen Robinson, who is a columnist for the West Bend Daily News and a blogger for the website bootsandsabers.com, and Matt Rothschild, editor of The Progressive Magazine. I'm Joy Cardine. This is The Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Friday Week in Review for this Friday, April the 20th. Kathleen Dunn and her guests are with you after 9 o'clock talking about the roots of violent behavior, the role of educators, administrators, and the media in dealing with troubled students. So that's coming up after 9 o'clock. Let's take a quick listen to what Senator Harry Reid said yesterday about the war in Iraq.
Now, I believe myself that the Secretary of State, Secretary of Defense, and you have to make your own decision as to what the President knows, that this war is lost and that the surge is not accomplishing anything as indicated by the extreme violence in Iraq yesterday.
Now, he backpedaled a little bit when on the Senate floor, but in essence, the war is lost. Owen Robinson?
If the Democrats get their way, they'll certainly be correct. I mean, I think it's interesting how Senator Reid's statements are—they're just factually not correct. The truth is that since the surge started, that troop deaths are down, civilian deaths are down in the Baghdad area. We're starting to see an uptick outside of the area where the surge is not there. And the surge isn't even complete. There's only 1/3 of the troops that are supposed to be sent eventually over there. So, I think that we've gotten to the point where there are certain people in the Democratic Party and the elected leadership who are so determined to pull out at any cost that they don't really care anymore whether we're winning or not. They just want to get out. And I think that their policy choices would be disastrous for this nation.
Matt?
Well, I think Owen's wrong on the facts. I mean, the troop deaths are actually up in Baghdad. They're about the same nationwide in Iraq, but they've increased in Baghdad with the increase of U.S. troops there. 3,300 U.S. troops dead now in Iraq. 24,000 U.S. troops wounded, most of them severely wounded. That doesn't look like winning to me. It doesn't look like winning to me when we see 200 or more people killed in Baghdad in a single day, as we saw on Wednesday. It doesn't seem like Baghdad's getting more secure, and certainly the rest of the country there doesn't seem to be improving in its security. This isn't a picture of winning or a picture of the road to winning. I'm glad that Harry Reid finally stood up and said, you know, the war is lost. It's about time that he did that. It's about time that more Democrats stood up and said that and recognized the reality. We need to recognize that reality before we can get out of there. As long as we let Bush distort the reality and claim that we're on the road to victory, the longer we're going to be stuck over there, and the more U.S. soldiers are going to die for no good reason, the more U.S. soldiers are going to get wounded for no good reason.
Let me bring in Susie in Seneca on this one. Hi.
I have to say, related to the Alberto Gonzalez comment that your speakers made, the people in the House and Senate are not responsible for that provision in the Patriot Act because it was put in conference committee. So nobody had the chance to vote on the Senate having the right to confirm or not confirm the...
Yeah, Susie, I know. We kind of moved
know,
on from Gonzalez.
I just thought that
so.
That was important for people to know, that this was not voted on. It was slipped in conference committee. As far as the war in Iraq goes, on Wednesday, at least 180 Iraqis were killed in car bombs in Baghdad. 25 bodies were dug up in a schoolyard in Ramadi. As of April 10th, 50 American soldiers and Marines were killed in Iraq just in the first 10 days of April. My sympathy is great with the families whose members died in Virginia. My son is serving his second tour in Iraq, and so what I know what it's like to worry about getting the news that somebody that you care deeply about has died, because this is the second time we're going to be spending over a year in that position. And to have somebody claim that things are going well in Iraq is a total falsehood and a denial of reality. The reality is that we invaded and destroyed Iraq because the Bush administration wanted to, not because we had any legitimate reason to do so. They have completely bungled any kind of reconstruction, putting their cronies in instead of choosing people with skills and ability. They have enriched their friends and their associates.
I'm sorry, Susie, we need to get a reaction from our guests, and I'll start with Owen Robinson.
Susie, first off, thank you very much for raising a son who's willing to go and serve his country. We're all very grateful for his service. I would go back just quickly on the conference committee that when things come out of conference committee, they still vote on it. So they did actually vote on that. But speaking of the Iraq war, and I kind of go back to Matt's point as well, talking about the troop death. It's, of course, every soldier who's killed or injured in war is tragic. And deplorable, and we should keep that down. But the truth is that they're out there to enact U.S. policy. That's their job, is to go out and fight. Soldiers sitting at home that's not what they do. That's why they practice and they go out and do it. Whether or not troops are dying is not a measure of success or failure. It's perhaps a measure of the tactical success or the choices of tactical decisions we're making, but it's not a reflection on the strategy as a whole. Keep in mind, troop deaths in other wars are much, much, much higher. We've lost more troops than that on single days in past wars. But that didn't change the fact that those wars were just and correct.
Yeah.
Well, this war is certainly not just. It's an illegal war. It's an unjust war. It was waged on false premises. The Bush administration, from Bush and Cheney on down, lied about it, lied about weapons of mass destruction, lied about ties between al-Qaeda and Saddam Hussein. The strategy has been incompetent. It's not a just war. It's not a war worth fighting. Certainly the cost of the war far exceed any possible benefits, and the cost of those war are above all human costs.
Yeah. Let me move on to another issue as we are approaching the top of the hour and many more issues to cover here. The U.S. Supreme Court this week upheld a ban on partial birth abortion, or what critics call partial birth abortion, a procedure used in late-term abortions. Matt Rothschild, how significant is this decision?
Very significant. Neanderthal decision. truly deplorable.
Why?
The judge, the five Supreme Court justices, all men, traded in their black robes for white robes, pretending to be doctors when they never went to med school, assumed that they knew more about the medical issue involved here than the professionals involved, for instance, at the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists, who testified in a briefing that they put before the Supreme Court that the safety issues are paramount here and this procedure is needed in many instances for the safety and health of the woman. They overruled, without saying so, Roe v. Wade's plank that says you got to allow the health of the woman to be predominant. And it was one of the most paternalistic decisions I've ever seen, saying that women essentially can't decide for themselves how they're going to feel afterwards, and they may feel guilty about it. So these five men are going to prevent these women from feeling guilty about it by banning this procedure. I mean, they are taking autonomy away from women, nothing less.
Owen Robinson.
I think it's, there are two issues here, and Matt is actually confusing them. The court only ruled that the ban on partial birth abortion is not unconstitutional. It was actually the legislature and the president who, after measured debate, debated it and voted on it with strong bipartisan majorities. I mean, there were 64 senators and 281 folks in the House from both parties who voted to put this ban into place. So the court didn't ban anything. All the court did was say that the legislation that passed Congress was not unconstitutional or was constitutional, and that's their role. And I think this really underlines the whole problem with Roe v. Wade and this whole debate in this first place. Matt likes to go off about how they exchange their black robes for white robes. I read that in your column yesterday, by the way, Matt.
Glad you liked it.
But they did that back in 73 because there's nothing in the Constitution that speaks to abortion at all, and it should have always been a measure for our elected representatives, our legislatures, and our executive branches to help vet this issue out with the American people. But once the court decided that they were going to be the final arbiters on everything to do with this, this is what we see. We see every time any abortion issue comes up, it has to go up to the Supreme Court, and we lurch back and forth on this issue, depending on who happens to be sitting on the bench at the time. The failure here, the problem started when the Supreme Court overstretched its authority and reached into matters that were none of its jurisdiction.
Now, one call on this one. Tim in Ladysmith. Hi, you're on the air.
I'd like to address Matt's comment. First of all, you mentioned that this was a Neanderthal type of decision, which I find that just amazing that you would make such a statement on a procedure that is totally unnecessary and about as barbaric as we could possibly get. It's amazing. We find such disdain about our soldiers being killed in Iraq, which no one wants our soldiers killed. But we have no problem.
Yeah, I know. I don't want to hear a graphic description right now of the procedure, but it's a barbaric procedure, Matt, according to
Tim. Totally unnecessary is what Tim said, and that's not what the professionals say who are in this medical field. They say it is necessary in many instances for the health of the woman. And, I'd rather take their professional opinion than Tim's on that, actually. You know, and the thing about this decision is it may not even save a single fetus because it's a procedure. They're going to have to change the way they do the procedure. The fetus isn't going to live if they're using a different procedure. So there's a bit of confusion on that. Also, as to Owen's point that the Supreme Court had no reason to wade into this field with Roe in the first place, they had no reason to do so only if you assume that women have no fundamental liberty and privacy rights.
So we need to touch on some state issues. Only 5 minutes more to go on the program, and we haven't really talked about things that happened in the state this week. How about the proposal to a statewide smoking ban. Lawmakers have introduced Governor Doyle's original proposal that we have a statewide smoking ban in all workplaces, including bars. And the sponsors of this bill said that they will not accept a bill if it exempts taverns. What do you see happening here, Owen Robinson?
It's hard to tell. There's a lot of people lining up against the bill. are lining up for the bill to support it. But what we're seeing is two powerful lobbies, the restaurant lobby and the Tavern League, going head-to-head on how they want this bill to look. The Tavern League wants taverns exempted from it. The restaurants are saying no way. So it's always interesting when you get special interest groups butting heads over these kinds of things, and really we're all just bickering about how much more we want to restrict our liberty on this issue, and I find it a bit offensive.
Oh, Matt?
Well, oddly, I take the libertarian position on this. I do think people should be able to smoke in taverns and bars, and I don't think the state should deny people that right. Restaurants is another thing. Other public places is another thing. But, you know, is the state really going to, worry about our health and safety when we go into a bar? I mean, 100,000 people die a year from alcohol-related disease. 435,000 people die a year from tobacco. So they're going to save, 335,000 people on this? I mean, people go to bars and taverns to sin a little bit. I mean, let's be real about that. And if they want to doubly sin by smoking a cigarette, that's okay by me. I know that a lot of people make the case about the employees there. Ideally, employees would have other places to go. I think everyone should be guaranteed a job with a decent wage, which would solve that problem.
Yeah, Tommy Thompson was in the news for a couple of different reasons this week. It looks like he's making most of his money for his presidential bid from Wisconsin donors, but he's also gotten some hot water when he told a Jewish group that earning money is part of the Jewish tradition. And then he later apologized. He, I think, was in Iowa stumping when he made that comment. You thought that was funny, Matt?
I thought it was clearly anti-Semitic. It was unbelievable. I mean, how long has Tommy Thompson been in public life, and he still, when he sees the word Jew, he sees a dollar sign? I mean, come on. That is about the oldest, one of the oldest stereotypes about Jews. I'm Jewish, and I found this terribly offensive. I don't think Tommy's up to hitting big league pitching.
Owen?
I agree. It was offensive, and Tommy is not up for the big leagues. I think what you saw was Tommy doing what Tommy does. He's made a career out of meeting with, in these small town hall meetings and connecting with people on a personal level, and he was trying to do that, and in the process managed to offend every one of them. To be quite honest, Tommy has no chance at the presidency, and he didn't before, he doesn't now, and so it's kind of a footnote.
You know, I almost don't have time for this, but I can't resist. I have a clip of John McCain while campaigning, I think just yesterday or the day before, singing a little tune to a Beach Boys song when someone asked, what are we going to do about Iran? And this is what he sang.
That old Beach Boys song, Bomb Iran. Bomb, bomb, bomb. Anyway.
Well, how's that going to fly, Matt Rothschild?
McCain's kind of in a free fall now. I mean, joking about bombing another country is not funny. It wasn't funny when Reagan said, in 5 seconds we're going to start bombing the Soviet Union. It's not funny when John McCain says, let's laugh about the possibility of bombing Iran, which is still a possibility under this Bush administration, which would have terrible consequences.
And only 30 seconds, Owen?
It looks like John McCain is following the storied tradition of John Kerry and about to joke.
Okay, well, we'll leave it there for this edition of the Week in Review. Owen, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you.
And Matt Rothschild, thank you.
You're welcome, Joy.
Matt Rothschild, editor of the Progressive Magazine, Owen Robinson, blogger for the website bootsandsabers.com, columnist for the West Bend Daily News. Thanks to Leo Duran for producing this hour and for production help from Cheryl Gasser. She got that John McCain ditty for me. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.